And a lot of people see problems. They'll say, well, I thought of that. And of course, when you tell them that you have the solution, they say, well, I thought of that. And I'm prone to say, well, why didn't you do something about it?
Diz Runs Radio, episode 417 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, just want to let you know, in case you're new to the show, or in case you haven't done so yet, this is a little reminder to you, that each and every month I give away a free custom training program. It's the same level, same quality, same level of service as what people pay for, but I just like to give one away every month for free. And in order to be eligible, all you need to do is head over to dizruns.com, and right there on the homepage, there's a button that says, click here to enter the giveaway. You click that button, you enter your name and your email address, and bada boom, bada bam, you're in and you're ready to go. And you're automatically re-entered each and every month as well. So, you know, once you enter once, you're good to go. And, you know, you got a chance to win every month. And, That's all there is to it. It's pretty darn simple. So if you haven't done that already, head over there and head over to the homepage. Or you can also go to dizruns.com/giveaway. It's super, super easy. There's a link in the show notes. So there's a link in the album information or the show information on your phone. So you just tap the album cover right there and a couple links pop up and it's one of them. Hit the link, bada boom, bada bam, you're good to go. So get yourself registered. Can't win it if you're not in it, right? But anyway, let's go ahead and get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, today I'm going a few easy miles with a woman that is an entrepreneur, a philanthropist, and of course, a runner. My guest today cut her teeth in the entrepreneurial world, not in running, but in baseball. And her product, the Stand Mail Mitt, has been on display at the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York since 1988. But we're not necessarily here to talk baseball. We're certainly here to talk running, though. And she's been running for a long time, kind of getting started probably at the ripe old age of 5 and still going to this day. So it's a pleasure today to be able to go a few easy miles with Ms. Carol Stosh Stanley, who is the owner and founder of Lace Locker. Stosh, thanks for joining us today and welcome to the show.
Oh, Denny, thank you so much for opening the lineup and giving us a chance to talk about a number of things that we love and about which we're passionate, and hope that we can connect with many others in your listening audience who are as passionate as well.
Oh, certainly. The pleasure is definitely mine. And guys, excuse me, if you want to check out more on Carol's product, or Stosh, we'll go with Stosh, I guess. That's the preferred nickname, I believe. Stosh's product, definitely check out lacelocker.com, and you can connect with her on the Twitters at the handle at lacelocker and also at Stosh Sports. And that's, it looks like Stash. It's S-T-A-S-H, S-P-O-R-T-S, all one word, at Stosh Sports. On the Twitter. And I'll have the links to everything we talk about today, as always, in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/417. So, Stosh, the way we always start off the show is with a very simple and straightforward question that sometimes has a simple and straightforward answer, but more often than not, it's a little bit convoluted and several layers deep, and it just gives us a great place to start the conversation. And that is to simply ask the simple question: what is your favorite distance to race and why?
I'm going to say the half, because I've had the most success at it. And, you know, when you struggle through a little nagging injuries, I always I knew I was going to be talking with you today, because this morning when I was running, my body parts finally all felt absolutely wonderful, and I lost track of the time, and I started when it was dark. And when it all of a sudden I would recognize that it was almost full bright light in the morning, I said, whoa. So I'm going to say the half. I've only done one marathon, and that one really beat me up. But I did it when I was much older. So I'm going to say the half.
Gotcha. Yeah, the half is a common answer for sure. And there's lots of good reasons. And, you know, it's It is a good race. It's a good distance. It's something that certainly requires some training and some effort and some strategy going into it. It's not just that all-out painfulness that is like the 5K and some of the shorter distances. But like you said, marathon can be a tough animal. So it's a nice middle ground.
Yep, absolutely agreed, Danny.
And I have to ask, you know, you're feeling good this morning. Are you still feeling good this afternoon after running for so much this morning?
Actually, I feel spectacular, and I'm like afraid to go to sleep tonight.
You don't want to jinx anything by waking up tomorrow.
I don't. I want to keep moving.
Yes, indeed. Well, I mean, speaking of keeping moving, we touched on this just a little bit before we got started today, but you know, we wanted to kind of save it for the actual interview and conversation itself. You know, like I mentioned in the intro, you've been running for a long time, for many, many, many years. Started off real young. What you know, is running just something that always came natural to you? What was the impetus to get you going in the sport that we all know and love?
My dad, I think the only thing he would say ever came natural to me was perhaps moving quickly. And I actually, in thinking about the answer to that, I started running probably as soon as I was able to do it. But the reason I got the nickname Speedball, and it stuck with me till the day he died, that I would run around the house like a crazy kid, and where the stairs were, I would just tumble down the stairs. And so my parents decided to put little hook and eyes on the doors, because back then the frames and the doors were all wood. Mm-hmm. And I did not like that. So I went and got the broom, and not only did I knock the hook off the eye, I knocked the hook and eye out of the door and the door frame. So I think I've been brain damaged ever since I was two. And the nickname Speed, and I can't say that I'm a fast runner, but I've got a pretty good reflexes even at my age now. And so my head has had a love affair with ground and road surfaces. I laugh about it because it started when I was probably 2 years old, and even into my 50s, and two accidents, being hit by a car as a pedestrian one time, as a runner another time, and then when I tripped on my shoelaces and face planted, I've got a really hard head.
So sometimes that can be a bad thing, but it sounds like at least in a few instances in your life, that has been an asset.
Well, I'm certain at some point I'll probably have some residual brain dysfunction, but it's okay. At least I've enjoyed the process to date. So I would think running, you know, any sport you play, that's all we did all day long, all the time. And in the summer, we played sports, and most sports involve running. So while I wasn't a pure runner, and I would never say I'm a runner. I would say I run. People that are really good at it are runners, just like I play golf, but I'm not a golfer.
Right.
So, and when you watch people that are really good at something, you understand why you don't call yourself that. So, I don't know. I've always loved being in motion. I've loved the thought, the sense of being able to propel yourself with just whatever you possess within yourself. My second master's degree was in kinesiology, and I just absolutely was enthralled by measuring, for example, in a windmill pitch in softball, the angle of the wrist at movement all the way. This is nerdy kind of stuff, but people don't think jocks do anything nerdy, but I don't know, graphing it on graph paper back in the dark ages now seems pretty nerdy to me.
Yeah, our bodies are ridiculous how well they can just, you know, do things, you know, like you said, like you look at something and it might look kind of easy, but yeah, the nerdiness of it, how the velocity, how much rotation, how much torque, different body parts and different sports and you know, different things that forces that we have to absorb. Our bodies are pretty amazing. If you really stop and think about it.
Why is it that elite runners, I think about Kim Jones, she's one of our product endorsers, and to this day she can run and her her body isn't debilitated. And yet I saw poor Frank Shorter here in town maybe about 6 weeks ago. And the poor guy isn't walking very well, and he's had some hip issues. And you go, well, okay. Well, they're not quite the same age, but you go, some bodies, the physical right. body, just can take it.
Yeah. It's crazy. And then you start to, you know, you can draw the conclusion that some people can run or some people can't, but then you also have to, at least my take on it is, you also have to look sometimes at some of the other circumstances of, you know, what other things are they doing that may or may not contribute to the problems, or the resilience of the body as far as rest and nutrition. Yeah. And there's so many layers to it that it's a complicated puzzle for sure.
Isn't it amazing that when you read a book like Frank Shorter's book that talks about their hydration consisted of, if I remember correctly, a deflated Coke, mm-hmm. and that how they were able to do what they did without any really scientific components.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, some of those stories from back in the day of, you know, we would look at that now and you know, what were they thinking? But, you know, like anything, you don't know until you know. And if it wasn't something that was worth studying or wasn't being experimented with because it's just how we do it, then it was just how we do it. And thankfully for those of us running these days, knowledge has progressed and information is available. And we know a few things to make help us in some of those situations that they didn't know back then.
Well, and you used one of my favorite words, Denny, and it's help. Help along the way. I've always, somebody told me I was a serial inventor, and I said, how do you spell it? C-E-R-E-A-L. What kind are you serving? And I've always been involved in sports, but I've always, something about needing to know why things work. And going back to, I started playing competitive softball when I was five. And I was the catcher, but I was the catcher because nobody was stupid enough to put the equipment on and get back behind the plate. And I injured my hand. I still have permanent nerve damage in my hand from not having any protection. And when I got into college and I was helping establish the varsity sport at State University of New York at Binghamton, I said, no, I'm not doing this anymore. And there got to be other people who have this problem, and I don't want little kids to learn the skills the wrong way and get injured and not appreciate the game and have a love for it because their hand hurt. Mm-hmm. And so that's the whole process of running in a different way is that, you know, running is spiritual, it's emotional, it's physical. It's psychological. For some, it can be occupational. And so it's pervasive. Running is pervasive because it's movement. It's a form of movement from one place to another. And that's really what we're doing in space, in the space in which we find ourselves every day, and as we move through time. And so running, to me, maybe it's a little existential. Because, it's all that stuff we get anal about when we're trying to make sure most that we can. And yet, if you really talk to the elites, they say you have to take yourself to a place where you really don't feel anything. Mm. It's like being in pudding, is that you're just putting the spoon through it. Or if you play a musical instrument, learning a musical instrument is learning a motor skill. Running is a skill. And so there's this book called Zen in the Art of Archery. It's a real small book. And when I started taking saxophone lessons a couple years ago, my instructor said, you have to read this. I go, you know, he's, what, 30 years my junior. I go, you want me to read a book on Zen in order to take lessons from you? I just want to play show tunes. And he said, yeah. Yeah, he said, and you know what? Boy, he was right. Because movement is not about being able to feel the movement. Really efficient movement just like when you hit a golf ball on the sweet spot, you hit a baseball on the sweet spot, you hardly hear it.
And you hardly feel it either. Like it feels so easy. Yep.
And I almost had a glimpse of that this morning, and then I, you know, came back to Earth, and I said, "This is kind of funny that I'm going." I had no idea what I was going to be talking to you about today. So I said, "Well, okay, I guess I was meant to reflect on that when I was talking to Denny today." But see, movement—it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing, and when I watch some of the special needs kids to whom we're trying to funnel pairs of lace lockers through our corporate sponsorships when we get them, is that to allow them to be able to experience their highest level of movement without them, their coaches, or their parents ever worrying about having a shoelace issue, which is it's a big deal for them. It's a big deal for us, but when you're not really good at tying your laces or necessarily being aware of their condition, it's a big deal. So working with Neely Spence Gracie, why does she like Lace Locker? Because it takes the shoelaces out of her arena of consideration. You minimize the variables. That's how you get to being moving and putting. It's just, and you've been there.
Yes, yes.
And we probably can count, maybe on both hands, the number of times it's been that fluidity without any feel whatsoever. I think Michael Jordan used to call it, and his coach, his mind conditioning coach used to call it, in the zone. It's when the baseball looks as big as a watermelon.
Right.
And moving as slow as an inchworm. And it's a beautiful thing. And, you know, as you watch your daughter, she's going to get to the point of developing a TED Talk right now on something called the insatiable appetite. And she has an insatiable appetite for learning, and it's only going to last in an insatiable form as long as her insatiable appetite is cultivated. Because as soon as we lose some of that insatiable appetite, we're hindered by what others think, by comments they make that might not necessarily be supportive. And instead of being free spirits who are just totally insatiable about learning, you watch her, okay, and sit there and just say, wow, I don't remember I ever had this. I want some of that juice. And that's such a beautiful thing. And when we're in that space where we hardly feel what we're doing, that's like the nutrition, the rest, the sleep, the working out, the conditioning, the pacing, the rhythm, blah, blah, blah. All of that happens at the right moment, that's when you have your peak performance. And you know what? There's no way to adequately describe how that feels to someone.
No, there's definitely not. It's one of those things that everybody describes it somewhat differently, and it's impossible to quantify it or to explain it well. It is. It's impossible.
It's a sense of nothingness, but it's everything.
That's a beautiful way to put it. That's a beautiful way to put it. And the most frustrating thing, at least in my perspective, is that there's so many factors that have to come together that it's impossible to really plan for it. It's impossible it's just kind of has to be on the right day. And when it kind of almost sounds like what your run was like this morning, when it hits, man, you don't ever want to stop. You want to keep going. You want to keep moving. Like everything feels great because it's so fleeting. And like you said, I mean, you maybe count it on one hand, two hands, something like that. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's a beautiful thing.
See, and that's what makes those elites so special. And I, my brother was kind enough to take me to the Olympics in Rio this past year. And you see, it's almost like a detachment from what they're doing. But the focus, when you think about, any distance run, any run, actually, that's competitive, so many things, as you just said, have to fall into place, okay? Mm-hmm. And you can only control so many of them that are within your direct purview. And to be able to be in the top tier on a consistent basis is almost mind-boggling to me, because there are so many variables and things have to fall into alignment to have success time after time. And I think about Neely, the past two USA Today championships. She finished second in both the, I think it was the 12 and the 25K. And I just said to myself, I wonder if Neely's disappointed that she didn't win. And then I said, oh my God, second place
right
in the nation and within a couple weeks of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And see, and the marathon runners, unless you're one of those crazy marathon runners that run one every three
all the time,
weeks,
right?
Or those ultras that do 100 or a double ultra, where like their skin is falling away from their skeleton when they finish the second one. It's of absolute amazement to me.
So I do want to shift gears just a little bit, but I think I might have an answer to my own question now, just from kind of where we've talked about with the stand mill mitt, for those that aren't aware, just the real quick, it's, you know, something that you wear on your hand underneath your glove that adds a little extra padding and protection for baseball, softball players, whatever, to cushion the ball from hitting your glove, which, like you said, I mean, that was a pain point you had as a softball player, as a catcher specifically. You got pitches coming in, you're catching them, protect your hand a little bit. And so, you know, with that invention product that you developed, that still is used and marketed today, you saw a problem, created a solution, and you know, served it to the masses so other people could benefit as well. Was there I kind of, again, from what you said earlier, I think I might have an answer that I didn't have before we started talking, but where did the idea for Lace Locker come from? Was, I have to imagine, there was a similar problem that you saw and a solution that came to you.
Well, it's a story, but it's a true story.
Those are the best ones.
So my morning runs are usually about four or five miles. And I run early and it's usually dark. And I think I might have had a headlight on. I might not have, because the road that I was running one day has some street lights. But anyway, to make a long story short, I tripped on my shoelaces and I face planted. Mm-hmm. And so I repelled off the ground and I got up and my mouth was full of dirt. Oh. And I said, whoa, let me make sure my teeth are okay. Is my nose bleeding? Anything on my face bleeding? And I said, no, this is the hard head thing I was telling you. And so I said, okay, well, I've got about a mile to go. I'll run back to the health club and then I'll just, clean myself up and see how sore I am in the morning. And I walked in the front door of the health club and everybody goes, what happened to you? And I hadn't even bothered to look at my knees. And my shoes, my socks, and my legs were totally reddened from the blood coming out my knees. And I just thought it was sweat when I was running. So I wasn't paying attention. So I went to work and then I went home and I looked at my shoes and I had to take them apart because they were a bloody mess. And I go, all right, now we're not doing this again. No, we are not doing this again. And I said, you know what? I bet you there's tons of other people that have problems with shoelace. I always had problems in basketball, baseball. I said, so this just can't be me. And then right away, I said, okay, I'm going to make a locker for laces and I'm going to call it Lace Locker. How obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Started working with paper, plastic, Velcro. Worked with a guy as a collaborator for a little while, but he left the project. Everybody thinks that you can create something out of nothing and make a lot of money in 6 months, and that's how it happens. And so it's just from literally banging my head on the ground and bloodying myself, and then I just kept after it and developed a couple of versions, and I've got the Lace Locker now has two patents. Our second one was just issued in April, and I'm working on a third patent that'll be a design patent, and it's kind of a cool looking thing. And most invention is in front of you. And as you said, you see a problem, and a lot of people see problems.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, well, I thought of that. And, of course, when you tell them that you have the solution, they say, well, I thought of that. And I'm prone to say, well, why didn't you do something about it? Because that's the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I was dreaming, and I still dream about Lace Locker frequently, when the design patent idea came up on which we're working, and we have a mascot, and what his name is Lockit, Lockit, that all these things, I just dream about them. And I'm really very fortunate, Denny, that there are people that believe, one, in the product, and two, now what we're doing via the Lace Locker Scholarship Fund, which now has tax-exempt 501(c)(3) status. And the fact that we're trying to use that scholarship fund, in my mom's memory, to allow first-generation females, who usually are the most likely ones to be able to be accepted to college but don't have the financial means to attend, and see, we're not looking for the top tier that everybody from, you know, Harvard, right, and all the big schools want. What I found I was doing is I wanted somebody in the middle of the road lane, which is from where I came, because I had to pay my own way through school. And I said, those are the ones that I want to help. Those are the ones that don't have a support system that can help them through the morass. And the story that I have about this is when that first scholarship is fully funded, it takes about $250,000 to fund a four ride at a state school. We'll look through the applications, and then we'll pick the winner, and I'll work with the school. And I don't know how many times I've dreamed this. And then we'll find out where they are, and the school will make arrangements for somebody from the school to make a home visit. They won't know it's going to be me or what I'm going to be there for. And we're going to, you know, the school will ask for the parents to be there and the applicant. And I'm going to knock on the door and say, hi, I'm here from such and such university, and I'm here to talk with you and your daughter about attending said school. And hopefully they'll say, well, come on in, because they have been contacted in advance. And I won't want to stay long. I'll just want to say, you know, the daughter would come in, and most of the time these kids are pretty shy. And believe it or not, I'm one of the biggest introverts on earth on those Myers-Briggs. I just like making myself into a clown to overcome it. And say, my understanding, we'll just say Olivia, is that you want to go to said school, and there's a significant financial need that is going to prohibit you. And I just want you and your parents to know. It's hard for me to talk about this. Every time I say it, it's don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get a Lace Locker scholarship.
That's got to be a pretty cool thing to say.
Yeah, and the first time I do, I know my mom's going to be in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where did the spirit of giving back come from? You know, is that something that's always been there, or that's something that came with Lace Locker? Or where did that seed get planted?
I think it has been below the surface, kind of, sort of, you know, I remember my mom always saying, you know, if somebody, you know, at the grocery store, go help that person. Didn't matter if it's male or female or what their age was. And kind of an insidious influence by probably my mom more than my dad, although my dad was very observant in that regard also. And I think when I started playing and I realized that I had some kind of gift to engage my teammates and helping them push themselves, and then when I saw when I was coaching and there were injuries, it just I wasn't cognizant of my gift of giving back, even though I might have been doing some of it, because I hadn't yet fully realized what my gift was and how I was going to use that gift to achieve my purpose in life. And so I think it's very incremental in most cases. It's certainly, I know my personality. If my parents had said to me, stand in that corner and count out 100 pennies from your allowance and make sure you give it away every week, that wouldn't have gone over well with me. Mm-hmm. Because I want to own, I want to make the decision. And my mom knew that, so she'd use reverse psychology on me. So, you know, parenting is hard. It is hard, and so much harder in today's world than ever before. And so if you can, Denny, you'll discover some of your own purpose as well. Is encourage that insatiable appetite in your daughter, and it's going to come back to you. And I guarantee you that more opportunities are going to open up for you. You're going to see them. They were always there in front of you, but you just didn't see them because you needed to give yourself an ocular adjustment. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, we're put on this earth to help others. I probably was reading a few books also, and I think that happened around the same time. I go, oh. And you know, Lace Locker just drilled it into my head a little bit more, even though a friend of mine accuses me. She said, you're a dreamer, a creator, a maker, and a helper. And that's the sequence in which you do things. And I said to myself, I never really analyzed myself like that, but thank you very much. And I think we all have that sequence available to us, and it manifests itself in a variety of ways based on who we are, what our gift is, and how we decide what the purpose of our life is and making use of that gift. So some people get more than one gift. Mm. And I'm not sure if I'd want more than one, because, man, I'm emptying the tank with just this one. But some people, they have more than one. And a lot of times, you know, when I used to coach, I had gifted athletes and I had blue-collar athletes. And when I played, I liked the ability of the gifted, but I always knew that we as a team would have better performance with the blue-collar athletes, because you knew what you were going to get out of them every time. You were going to get 110% effort. And so sometimes I think having more than one gift is a curse.
Yeah, that's true. It's a different way of looking at it than I have before, but I agree. Yeah, that'd be tough if you had too many gifts that you had to try to be able to give away. That would could very easily wear on you.
Yep. Make it old fast.
Yes, indeed. So as we're getting kind of to the point of wrapping things up today, Stosh, the way I like to end the show is asking what I call a philosophical question. So it's something that's very much open ended. You know, it could be a short answer, it could be a long answer, it could be an in between answer. We've had all of them before, and we'll continue to have all of them in the future. So there's certainly no right, no wrong, anything like that. And I'm going to go a little bit off script. Not that I ever stick to a script anyway, which was a story for another day. But you've mentioned several times over the course of our chat today the idea of having that insatiable appetite to continue to learn and continue to kind of grow and develop. So I just would be curious as we're wrapping up today. What are the things, or what are one or two things that are your insatiable appetite of continuing to learn right now? What things are you working on, learning, trying to improve yourself on as we're wrapping up today? It could be running related or anything else, whatever it might be.
I think it's to try and understand as many facets of a nonprofit organizational structure so that I can optimize that structure to create collaborative opportunities for athletes, for other foundations, for individuals, for celebrities who want to be able to make a difference in the world. I want to be able to give people opportunity to see what you can do for someone when you give them the gift of education. Education is probably the most powerful gift that you can give. And to, let's say, somebody has lost a husband and they want to endow a scholarship in their husband's name with us, they can do that. But it's not about us. It's about giving them the chance to create a legacy for their spouse, but to also be the one who's going to be making the difference of giving a chance to fertilize the insatiable appetite to devour learning year after year after year. And they say that you meet about 10,000 people in a lifetime. So I call it the power of 10. So over several years, okay, 10 people with 10 people times 10 people, I mean, it can be in the millions of people's lives that you are influenced. And I say that while we think the great people of the world are Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, Abraham Lincoln, if each one of us, if I figured out how to use the gift that I was given to make a difference in somebody's life through Lace Locker and the Lace Locker Scholarship Fund, I'm going to be helping a lot of young women create opportunities for greatness in themselves and for others for many years to come.
Yeah, that's no question. You keep paying it forward. It impacts way more than you'll ever know, than I'll ever know, than anyone will ever be able to know, which is incredible. So, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for using your creativeness, your entrepreneurialness, your inventiveness, to not only solve an immediate problem, a problem that you obviously had, a trip and a fall and a little bit of a bloody mess, but to also, like you said, to do something that pays it forward and changes the world. And if more people did that, and I'm speaking to myself here too, if more people did something to pay it forward, this world would be probably a little bit better place than it might be on certain occasions.
And the opportunities will forever be there. Try to catch one between now and when it's time to answer the question, what have you done with the gift that you were given? Denny, thank you so much for letting me ramble and for having the chance to just say to people, you have a lot within. Keep looking.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And guys, again, once again, lacelocker.com is the website, on the Twitter, at lacelocker or at Stash Sports. Again, STASH Sports. And disruns.com/417 is the link for the show notes. We'll have some links back to Lace Locker and to some of the things they're doing and all the things. We'll have them all outlined there. So make sure you check those out. Stash, again, thank you for taking the time. Thanks for sharing some stories and some wisdom. We don't always get some wisdom on this show, but we definitely did today. So thank you for coming in and sharing your story and what you're doing. And if we can do anything to support you in the future, please let us know. And all the best, and we'll certainly be in touch.
Thank you, Denny, and God bless.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Stash and myself. And as always, I would love to know what stood out to you from this particular episode of the show. For me, I think it really kind of came down to one of the last things that we talked about, one of the last things that Stash was mentioning, and that was the idea of paying it forward. And obviously, she's doing that and putting that into play with the Lace Locker Scholarship Foundation. But I think sometimes we, at least for me personally, I'm not going to throw all of you under the bus. I'll throw myself under only. But I think sometimes I look at something like that and think that you have to do this big grand gesture, this big donation, paying for college for somebody in order to you know, really make a difference. And I mean, I know that's not the case. I know that that's not true, but sometimes that's just kind of the feeling that I get. So this chat was just a little reminder, and hearing her talk about it there towards the end was just a little bit of a reminder to me that the little things matter too. The little things that you can do for others, holding the door for them, you know, just offering a little bit of an assistance or whatever it is, just a smile sometimes, acknowledging someone, saying hello. Those little things matter, and they make a difference, and people appreciate that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that we can pay forward on an everyday basis. You know, we might not be in a situation, Lord knows I'm not in a situation where I can, you know, fund a scholarship type of campaign or give some type of huge charitable donation that you know, is earth-changing for some folks. But sometimes when you're out on a run or when you're just at work or in daily life or whatever, acknowledging somebody, saying hi, offering a smile, like I said, just doing those little things makes a difference. It makes a difference, and you know, you do something good for somebody, and then they do something good for somebody else, and pretty soon this world will be a whole lot better place if everybody did something good for everyone else, or for someone else, and that just continues to manifest and grow and expand, and pretty soon we are all doing good for each other, and that would be a beautiful thing to do, a beautiful place to be, especially, you know, today, as they're still figuring out everything that went on in England and Manchester last night, yesterday evening. There's a lot of room for good in this world, folks, and that's just on my mind today, and it stuck out as I was going back through this episode with Stash. So that was my takeaway. I would love to know what it is for you. What stood out to you from this particular episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, and as always, you can head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/417, and leave a comment there and let everyone know what stood out to you from this particular episode of the show. So that wraps up today's chat. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget, DizRuns.com/giveaway or right there on the homepage, DizRuns.com. Get yourself entered to win a free training program for the race of your choice. You don't have to use it right when you win it. You get it. You hold on to it. Put it in your back pocket. And when you got a race coming up and you want to work with a coach, there you go. You're ready to go. And we'll take care of you, get you to the finish line, and hopefully have a great race and a great time along the way. So that's it for today. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you have a great rest of the day. And until next time, take care of yourselves, do something good for somebody else, and we'll talk soon. Take care, guys.